It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Love.
And how about that? We're playing with the full house today, so you got a lot of brain power here for anybody who wants to call in and ask some questions. Yeah, Joey's microphone needs a little goosing, but we'll have Roger take care of that. No problem. It is the first part of the year. So we'll get it all leveled out here pretty soon. All right, for the regulars, we're wrapping up this month. We're wrapping up our 11th year on the air. We start the 12th month at February 1st. So where it goes, I don't know. But to those of you who've made it possible for so long, thanks. Stay with us. We try to provide something each week that's of value to everybody. If you're new to the show, we aren't, but you are, then you should get to know us. And the way to do that is every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, you just dial in or catch us on the app. Got a lot of people listening across the country nowadays just by going to the app on their phone or whatever. And it's always just right there. We make everything easy. And we try to always do that. One of the worst things anybody can do is think this is more complicated than it should be, because yes, there's a lot of complexity, a lot of details, but if you don't understand it, like I'm leading to something here that we'll get to later. If you don't understand what's going on, then don't do things. Increase your understanding first. We are primarily an educational unit as we sit here on Saturday mornings. All right, enough of all that. We'll have a trivia question after the first break, as always. Who knows what else will come up, but if you want to call in, dial 904-222-8255, and we will put you right on the air, as we have promised and done for 11 years. It was quite a start to a new year, especially when people looked at the last 2 years and thought, well, this can't happen again. Yeah, we're going to perhaps argue that today. That'd be my guess. All right, Adam, wrap it up. Let's let everybody smile this week.
Yeah, definitely a lot to smile about this week. And I am back in the studio live after a hiatus. I had some traveling. I'm sure you guys roasted me suitably while I was gone.
I was surprised you gave me some good market wrap-up content opportunity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was appreciative. Normally I get the down markets when you're out of town. So yeah. Thanks for that.
That's true.
Everybody like us likes to think they do their best work when they're out of town.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And it's often true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the S&P jumped off to a good start to the year. It's the first full week of trading for 2026. It gained 1.6%. However, the other indexes did even better, with the NASDAQ gaining 1.9% and the Dow up 2.3%.
The small caps.
Hold on. I'm getting there.
I know that we're not used to talking about them. I've just been sort of following them lately, so I want to make sure they get their due.
Yeah, the start to the year is great news, because historically, when the first week of the year is positive, returns for the rest of the year tend to be above average for the next month, quarter, and year. So when the first full week is negative, the opposite tends to be true. For example, in 2022, the first week was down about 2%, and the rest of the year was down almost 20%. So
I remember
that is not
can't forget
100% correlation, but it is a pretty strong correlation between the first week and the rest of the year. So that's kind of exciting. One index that we don't mention much, as Dad alluded to, is the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index, and that is off to a great start this year. The index has rallied almost 5%, and the same thing holds true for the Russell as does for the S&P, in that as the first week goes, so does the rest of the year. Could small caps be the internationals of 2026? What I mean by that is that both small caps and internationals have really lagged the S&P for many, many years. And in 2025, international stocks finally rallied and finished the year well ahead of the S&P for the first time in, I don't even know how many years, many years. In 2026, it looks possible that small caps could pull off that same feat. So that would be nice to see them get back to their historical average, because traditionally small caps actually outperform the S&P.
Yeah, I know of a couple of fund companies that have been waiting for what you're saying for to like be true.
15, 20 yeah. years.
Yeah. And to be fair, those fund companies that kind of overweight value and overweight small caps have kicked butt for like 30 years.
Yeah.
And then it just exactly. did not. And then they just didn't.
Yeah. It's also good if you own the total market fund versus the S&P 500, because you get the benefit of that small portion of small caps in the fund. And so you might outperform the S&P if you own a total market fund mm-hmm. in that scenario.
Yeah, I know a few investors who have been banking on small caps so long that we were about to fall asleep.
Yeah, it's hard to, just as a contrarian or a value investor, to look at something that's been just down for 15 years and say, why hasn't it come back? I mean, silver is another example, and I'll get to that one in a minute. But and then you buy it, and then you wait 5 years and nothing happens. It's very discouraging.
Yeah.
When you're in that situation, and then you get clients asking, why do we still own this? Why do we still own this? Just wait, just wait.
Yeah.
And then you get a year like this year or last year in particular in silver, and you're like, oh, that's why we owned it.
Yeah. Well, the same for international, right? Like,
yes.
You know, people are like, why am I not just 100% SPY? SPY is outperforming every year.
Right.
And then last year happens.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, are you willing to give that up?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, one of my oldest sayings is there is no way to end a sentence that starts out, I'm thinking of putting it all in.
Mm.
You cannot finish that sentence appropriately.
Unless it ends with a perfectly diversified portfolio designed by Adam Van Wyk.
You know? Prove me wrong. You can't actually finish that sentence.
Yeah.
Speaking of international stocks, they have really kept up the momentum heading into 2026 with the All World Except U.S. Index up 3.1% year to date. Emerging markets are doing even better, adding 4.4%. Israel is the hottest country. It's up 7.2%. Well, India's the worst performing market, down 1.3%, kind of a surprise on the.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you had any.
I have nothing.
Reasoning behind that.
Nothing. I just noticed that was the case. Commodities have also rallied to start the year to not really surprising considering what's happening in commodities, but that's driven by a continued frenzy to buy precious metals and an increase in the price of oil. Oil's up 2.4%, gold is up 4.6%, silver is up 12.3% to lead all asset classes higher, and this follows 2025 where silver gained over 144%. And that was with a pullback in December. The silver chart is starting to resemble the global warming hockey stick chart at this point. It's just insane. Bonds seem to have returned to their pre-COVID behavior after a very strange 4 or 5 years. The bond market returned just over 7% last year and is up about a third of a point this year. Both AGG and BND, two ETFs that follow the bond market, they're yielding around 4% currently. And honestly, bonds look about as attractive as I've seen in a long time.
What? And they deserve it because
it's been ugly,
sad for a long time.
Yeah, well, at 4%, there's now a healthy gap between what you get in a high yield savings and what you get from a bond fund,
which exactly.
hasn't been that true.
No, it hasn't at all. Years. Yeah, and between the S&P 500 dividend yield, it just looks very attractive right
now. Yeah, starting to feel a little normal.
Yeah,
dare I say.
Yeah, and we were looking in the office this week at the yield curve, just the difference in the yield curve from. With 3 months ago and a year ago,
yeah.
yield curve hasn't been normal since I can remember, and it's still not perfect, but it's sure a lot closer.
A lot closer, mm-hmm. and the trend is definitely towards a normal yield curve.
Yeah, frankly, long bonds are not paying what they should be yet, but it's definitely coming. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. I'm sure there's more to say about this and many other things, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wyk Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wyk Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wyk.
I'm Adam Van Wyk.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we do have a trivia question as usual today. And as always, it's sponsored by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. Things are getting better in the country. I don't know how many of you have been following it, but the Atlanta Fed has a tracking device for GDP. And this week, they doubled their projection. They went from 2.7 to 5.4. 5.4 would be an astounding quarter.
Do you remember another quarter that was 5 anything?
Yes, I do, but not very many.
Yeah.
Is this GDP?
I remember 2 8% quarters.
Okay.
One happened under Reagan and one happened under W. But it was following some real messy times.
That's
so
usually
it wasn't
when you
a
see
shock.
Those things. Yeah. Yeah.
But for normal run-of-the-mill times, 5 is a big number. And it doesn't surprise me either. But
can I make a point on that? Just to like really make a point about how good that is. So the only other place that really has done that is China. And the way that China does it, and they haven't always done it, of course, that's when you have the government telling everybody to do one collective thing, you can achieve something like that. For us to be able to do that with the current vibes in the United States political arena under democracy and capitalism is incredible.
And in China, at least I think the estimate is like 4% of their 7% historic growth rate is just from people moving from farms into cities and the productivity gains that you see there and the economic activity that creates.
Which all of that's behind us.
We don't have that. Yeah, exactly.
And if everything else fails in China, they've got that one last thing. They'll just flat out lie. It's hard to beat that one.
Yeah.
But that's not my trivia question.
Okay.
That was my answer. But this is setting up to be a really good year. And there was something that happened this last week in general. And it was a survey that's repeated frequently. It went under 50% for the first time in years. But I'm not going to tell you what it is because I want you to tell me what it is. What changed in the public this week to a very, very healthy degree under 50%? I'll give you some hints as the day goes on if we have to. All right, let's back to what happened in the market this week.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the economic news. It was a little mixed, but mostly positive, I would say. I think the one exception was the jobs report. It fell short of expectations. It wasn't a total disaster, but it wasn't this sort of boom number that I know a lot of people are hoping for. The forecast was for an increase of 70,000 jobs, and it fell short. It came in at 50,000. But previous months were also revised down by a total of 76,000. So the overall report was a negative 26,000, which, you know, it's just like kind of blah. It's not good. It's not terrible. The unemployment rate did tick down to 4.4%, which was a bit of a surprise. And but then when you combine that with the first time unemployment claims coming in at a very low 208,000, the employment picture, it looks like a employment picture where nobody's firing and no one's hiring.
Yes.
It's just kind of steady.
Stability's not all bad.
No, not after the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So.
And one more thing on those revisions back, especially in October. October was government shutdown. Anything that includes October statistics is suspect. November still had some of the shutdown and people didn't get back to work. This was the first time that we've had everybody doing what they do, but their data might be a little corrupted. I would think by the time we get to March and April, you'll be able to believe the jobs report much more than you do now. That's my overall view of it. I can't prove it, but I will be between now and April.
I think the stat that a lot of people will find at least the most interesting, if not the best, is that federal government jobs, not including the post office, declined 268,000 in 2025. That's the most on record for any year going back to at least 1990.
Yeah, you don't have to make my day any much more than that could right there.
I think the most shocking government report that was released this week was that the trade deficit came in at $29.4 billion. That's the smallest for any month since 2009. The target, the forecast was $58.7 billion.
And I wonder why.
I don't remember a number lower than $50 billion since we've been doing this.
Yep.
So that was a huge difference.
It was a policy change, and it worked.
Another good number was the ISM services number. That increased to 54.4, well above the 50 that signals growth.
Good.
And the forecast was 52.2. Unfortunately, the manufacturing index went the other way and showed contraction, which was kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the regional Fed reports are reporting growth in manufacturing, but the ISM report is not. So I wonder who's right.
Yeah, look down the road a year for that one. There are so many factories being started, rehabbed, finished. So many things that aren't online yet, but they're coming in. And you got to look at this next election and say, I wish we could start these things faster, but construction takes a long time. It's not going to be easy. If this doesn't go well, it's one of those things that could derail a really good time.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? I'm not going to borrow trouble with it, that's for sure. Anything else important?
Nope, that was it for the market wrap today.
Okay, I don't think you mentioned this. The semis are really hot right now, the semiconductors.
They are, despite NVIDIA being flat to down.
Yep.
So that's really good news.
Yeah, and some of the smaller ones and the memory chip makers and things like that. If you've been listening to us for a long time, this is one of the things that you hear us talk about. Back in the old days, it was always the transports that were the bellwether for the economy and hence the market. And it was when the transports are moving, that means there's a lot of business being done in the country, and therefore it should be good for the market and so on. Well, that became less important as we moved into the digital age. And I don't know who first declared it, but I think it was a stroke of brilliance. Somebody decided that it's now the semiconductors that are much better predictor of the economy and the market than the transports are anymore. And I just like to throw that out because they're humming right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're really humming. So just to see a boatload of good news out there.
Yeah, it does feel like a good setup to the year, but we'll see what happens.
Some people say they don't like surprises. I love surprises when they're on the upside. Hopefully our clients are feeling the same thing because their accounts are sure looking better. All right, should we move on to news?
Let's do it.
How about this one? The definition of irony, right here in my left hand. New York City transit hike. New York City's subway and bus fares rose to $3 yesterday, up 10 cents for most rides. Who yesterday was the mayor of New York? Oh, I know. Here's the guy that said it'll be free.
Is that something that was pre?
It was preset.
That's what I thought. Okay.
I would eventually give him the credit he deserves for that because he didn't have a damn thing to say about it.
No,
frankly.
You just wanted to have fun saying it.
It's just the irony of the situation.
It is very ironic.
But they carry over 4 million passengers daily in the subways, and the buses are over 1 million. And an estimated 1 in 5 New Yorkers struggles to pay for public transit, according to an anti-poverty group. Of course, what are they going to say? They're going to find poverty if they can. Otherwise, who needs them, right?
I mean, it's not hard to find poverty in New York. Who can afford to live there?
Yeah. You move there, you're in poverty. And speaking of moving there, guess what California is doing now to kick out people?
Well, they implemented a wealth tax, I believe.
Well, they haven't
implemented it yet. But.
Okay.
So the stage that whole thing is at right now is they're trying to implement a 5% wealth tax. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't sound bad enough, just wait till you hear some details about how they're putting together the calculations for what wealth is.
Well,
so
enlighten us, please.
Okay. So one of the things that they're doing is, you know, in the world of major tech companies, you have common shares, you have private shares, you have preferred shares, and then you have super voting shares. What they're doing is they're looking at super voting shares, which, you know, may have 10 votes per shares, unlike common stock. And they're not looking at the liquid value of that stock price times the number of shares that you have to determine what that item means on your balance sheet. They're multiplying it by the voting power. So if you have a person like Larry Page and Sergey Brin, both of whom, Google execs who have now left California, and this hasn't even hit the ballot. They're just like, forget it. I'm not even waiting to find out. They're worth probably $100 to $200 billion each on paper.
For those who don't know, they're the co-founders of Google.
Right. And so a 5% wealth tax and $200 billion. Anybody want to do the math? It's a bad day.
It's a bad day.
That's
a really bad day.
But the good news is they're going to spread it out 1% a year for 5 years.
Oh, right. Well, wait, it gets a lot worse. So if you multiply it by the voting power of their super voting shares.
Oh, yeah.
Their wealth in California by this law would be determined at over $1 trillion.
Oh.
On which they're going to be taxed. They would have been taxed if they stayed 5%.
So that's actually a 25% tax then.
A 25% tax on their entire wealth per year.
Wow.
okay. payable by Klarna over 20. You know, it's like yeah. you can do the buy now, pay later option. It's wow. still not that helpful.
Coconut Grove just rolled out the red carpet for Larry Page.
Yeah.
And because he bought a little property there mm-hmm. recently, two of them close together on the water. One of them was only $73 million, but the other one was $100
million. Wow. I was listening to a podcast on the way here, and Trump's, what is it, the crypto czar, David Sacks, he just mm-hmm. left California in December, too.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Texas. We're listening to the same thing.
Yeah. So it's happening in droves, and he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
And what they always do, and they're doing again, is they're creating their budgets to show you how they're going to get rid of their debt and deficits, and they're doing it on their static the kind of thing that you were just talking about. If nothing else changed, this is how much we'd get. And then people leave. So they always miss it. Mm-hmm. Typical. All right. Got to take another quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And before we go any further, we had a caller ask a very, very serious and important question. How many ducks did you get, Adam?
My limit is what I got. Both days it was amazing, as always. Arkansas is just the duck hunting capital of the world for a good reason.
So apparently the ducks don't communicate well and say stay out of this area.
They're not that bright.
That's excellent.
Yeah, Adam sent a video, and it looked like it was a good day to be Adam and a bad day to be a bird.
Yeah, for sure.
Still, did the usual dog tag along?
Oh yeah.
No good.
Yeah.
You don't go duck hunting without a good dog.
Yeah, we did the second day. The first day he tagged along, though.
Okay. It's funny. All right, I do want to remind everybody again, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there. What very exciting, wonderful household event just took place where less than half of the households are now saying that this applies to them? And it's really important, and it's a real interesting sign of things to come. I know it's not a traditional or conventional trivia question, but it has a point. And my point has always been that my trivia has a point. So that's why. All right, let's talk about the billionaire tax and then some other things. If we have beaten that one up, we'll go on to the what I think is going to be a real interesting discussion of Trump and telling corporations what they can and cannot do, private corporations.
I have a final thought on the billionaire thing. Maybe you guys have responses, but I think California's got $30 billion of debt, last I heard, and they're trying to figure out what to do with that. They've got a ton of social programs, whatever. If it works for them and the people that live there, fine. But obviously the way they're going about trying to close that debt is not working. And then in other states, we have all this fraud that's being exposed. You know, it seems like the first step order of business would be, and we just heard this on the podcast we're listening to, Adam, is figure out where the leak in the bucket is before you start pouring more water in from people that have nothing to do with it, presumably.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how people come together. You know, this wealth tax is not a sure thing at this point, but it has a lot of popular steam. Whether it hits the ballot has to do with whether the union behind it can get enough signatures, which is an expensive and arduous process, to get it on the ballot. And, you know, it's not really clear whether Gavin Newsom and his crew is interested in this. If they oppose it, they might be able to do something to get it off the ballot. But ultimately, it comes down to these signatures. So there's still a couple steps before this becomes reality. But sounds like in the case of people that have a lot of wealth and are looking at being poor in 4 years, they're getting out.
Yeah, and I was just saying that the reason people get afraid when they hear these things is that California has passed so many stupid things. Now they're on to reparations. They won't fund it, but they're going to pass it. Mm-hmm. Oh, every person who can qualify, and part of the problem out there is there's never been a slave in California, so it's hard to qualify, but they're going to get up to $5 million, but there's no money to pay them. So if they'll pass something that stupid, they could pass this.
That's, yeah. If I'm a billionaire, which I'm not, but if I was and I lived in California, I wouldn't live there for much longer.
No.
It doesn't matter if they pass it or not. It's just the threat of it. at that point, it's got to feel very personal. They're coming after me.
Yeah.
Why would I stay here? There are plenty of states that wouldn't
do
that.
Why do I see the red dot on my forehead or force out of my wallet?
Exactly.
They want me to live so I can keep paying, right? All right, the head of NVIDIA, Jensen Huang, said that he is going to stay in Silicon Valley, and I think it's just too big there to extradite himself. And he even said, and I would pay it, but I don't think he's real happy about it. And there's another guy I didn't know. His name is Patrick Collison, and he is the founder of Stripe, and I don't know what that is either.
Oh, it's a payment.
It's a payment processor. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
He is going to Miami. He just toured Miami and came back and said, that place is just unbelievable. It is so tech-friendly. It's so on fire. It's so entrepreneurial. And it's not Florida, or it's not California. I mean, so I think they'll see him there. I don't know what he's worth, but there's a lot of people like that that are doing this kind of thing. I got a few other names in here, too, but, you know, not going to win.
I mean, this
exercising stupidity.
These things can always change. But if you just look at what's going on in Florida right now, it's hard to imagine Florida not being the biggest economy, the biggest state economy in the country. If you project out what's happening, I mean, we've got mini Wall Street in West Palm Beach. We've got tech billionaires moving to Miami. We've got, look at what's happening in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I mean, I drove downtown the other day by the stadium. It looks like a boomtown. It's just Jack's Beach is 20 years ago was kind of a dump. Now it's like every square inch of old property is getting bulldozed and replaced with high end new stuff. It is. And that we're just like little old Jacksonville.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I think we're just benefiting so much.
We're just a small market team.
That's right. Well, even the Jags are benefiting.
I know.
If they keep winning, it's going to get even bigger.
Yeah, when the stadium's done and, you know, Jacksonville Beach keeps doing what it's doing and all these companies keep moving off Butler and, you know, I think it's a decade from now, we won't recognize this place. There'll be a lot of good things going on.
Yeah, you've got the whole area south of Butler getting filled in now. And it's just, I think that Florida, I just have a hard time believing Florida won't be on this amazing track for quite some time if we keep making good decisions and other states keep making poor decisions.
Yeah, they have to remember that parking is very important. I think there are areas of the beach that are, they're not reaching their potential because you can't park down there. So there's some things that we have to handle better than
These are big city problems, though, not Jacksonville problems. It's just this is it's changing.
Yeah. Well, if you work downtown Jacksonville, I haven't had any experience with that.
Parking is not a problem down there unless you park in a garage that closes over the weekend.
I don't wish that on
anybody. Shots fired.
What a horrible downside. Actually, it shows you how dumb some of those people are. They close on a weekend, they close a parking garage. That's just nuts. Talk about a revenue loss. All right. Donald Trump, president of the United States, a very powerful man, and he is fixing to tell corporations that they can't buy individual houses. And I just want to throw that open for some opinions in the room.
All right, well, let's.
It's uncomfortable.
Let's not start with the opinions. Let's just go with the facts. This is a populist move, and I think it reaches across the aisle. Honestly, I don't think it matters who you ask, but if you ask someone off of the street, should BlackRock be allowed to own private homes? That you will get a very strong response from many people. Absolutely not. It's driving up the cost of housing, and so this is like reaching out to the average person on the street and saying, I'm going to do something that you're going to like.
My free market principles that have been with me for 75 years, I get nervous. They're showing a yellow caution sign on this thing. What do you think?
I think it's a populist move that does nothing. The net effect of it is zero.
Yeah.
I don't think that. That had,
what about the shareholders of BlackRock?
I think that in terms of contribution to their bottom line, this makes up 0.05%. I mean, I just don't think it's relevant.
We can put some more data behind this to contextualize it. So for the The amount of, so the rule would apply to corporations that own over, I think it was 1,000 homes.
Okay. So it has to be in at a certain scale.
Yeah. Sorry, I lost that number.
That's okay. It's
either
a
100 or 1,000. Yeah, yeah. So it's not, you're not talking about like a limited liability corporation person who's renting 5 homes. We're talking about big, big institutional. I think it was 1,000. And that, the amount of homes in America owned by that type of group is 1-3%. So a couple million homes.
Okay.
And the estimated housing shortage is 3-4 million, which is relevant, but not, it doesn't mean like if we get the corporations out, suddenly all these people have homes and they own and there's no housing shortage. People live in these homes right now. We're still going to have a housing shortage.
Those people have to go somewhere. If you sell it to a private investor who moves in, those people, those renters are displaced.
Right. They're theoretically displaced. And, you know, I think you'd have to look deeper at the data of what it costs to live in these places to know, would they immediately then buy these homes and would their cash flow support it? Or are these people living in these homes and getting a good deal for the living experience that they have? I just don't think it's as vanilla and simple an issue.
Yeah. And corporations are not setting the market rate on rent. Rent is decided by the market.
Right.
And so they're offering them at market rates, and families are probably renting them because they can't afford to buy. And that provides a valuable service. Like a lot of families want to rent a home rather than rent an apartment. And there isn't always a great supply because it's not like the average Joe off the street doesn't own 5 rental homes. Like,
right.
You know, it's not an inexpensive thing to do, and it's time-consuming and costly to own rental homes. So having a corporation that does it, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
And one of the major complaints about these large corporations doing it is they have very impersonal landlord and service experiences and stuff. And so, I mean, at what point does that become a federal issue, or is that a state landlord law issue? You know what I mean? If that's the main gripe.
And I'm, because it's just my little flag that's going off in my brain about dictating to private corporations, publicly traded, but private corporations, that they can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if you look at the overall regulatory environment in this country and others, it's just one more, if you want to be so.
But does it bring down the price of housing? No.
I don't think, and it doesn't solve the housing shortage. We have to build more homes.
Yeah.
Period. No matter what you do with this particular, but I think, I mean, I get why people care about it. I get why people are mad at corporations when they're buying up all the homes and they can't get them.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. And I don't blame them either. Mortgage rates just ticked down. Another thing Trump did that we'll talk about as soon as we get back. All right. Don't go anywhere. One more break. And this is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
I'm Adam Vanway.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. What wonderful thing just happened in a survey of American homes? It hasn't been the case for a long, long time, and it's good news. And we'll give you about another 7 or 8 minutes before we even consider talking about it. All right, everybody who has been listening for a while, we probably remember last year when IRS decided it wanted to do your taxes for you. And I came on the show more than once and ranted and raved, don't do it. I hate inherent conflicts of interest. If the people who want your money prepare your tax returns, that is a conflict of interest waiting to happen. It's over. They got rid of it. OBBBA shut it down, and I could not be happier. Unfortunately, in its wake, some people are thinking, well, I can no longer file for free. Not true. A lot of companies, it's usually based on income, a lot of companies will file for free for you. So, you know, search it or whatever you want to do. And you can always start with places like TurboTax and see. But if you make too much money, that won't happen. Otherwise, you can find a really good place, that very reputable place to do it. So don't fear that getting rid of it out of the IRS is a problem. It's not. I got just a few of them here. Some will do it for 84,000 incomes and others are 67, like that. So if you're a lower income person and you really don't need to and don't want to pay for a tax return done, it's not a problem. You can still get it. All right, you guys each took the CFP because you got them. Mm-hmm. When you were taking your classes and you were in the Social Security part of it, and I know Adam and I took it from the same guy, but I loved that part of it where he would be teaching you something and it ended over and over with, and the 255. You know what the two, remember what the 255 is?
No.
Since the dawn of creation, basically, the lump sum death payment.
Oh, yeah.
It's 255. Now, see, I've been a CFP for 25 years, and this was before that, so it, I always got a kick out of it. And the 255, and it depends on if the person died with them.
And just to be clear for listeners, this is a death benefit associated with, you get one check for $255. That's been the case.
That's it.
And a laughable amount of time.
So there is a bill called the Social Security Survivor Benefits Equity Act. It would raise that to $2,900 and then index it for inflation annually thereafter. How many times do I sit here and rail about the government not indexing every part of the tax code? Well, this would be a good start. And what's interesting to me is the people behind it. This I would not expect. Maybe if I thought about it more, I would. Senators Sheldon Whitehouse, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Richard Blumenthal, Cory Booker, and Ed Markey. Now, you could not assemble a bigger group of whacked out liberals in the Senate than that group. But, you know, they found an acorn, and I say, when you're right, I'll call you right. I think they're right. Yes, I know it depletes the trust fund faster, which all good things seem to do, but you know, it's just, it's a fundamental fairness factor to me. 255, 30 years ago, 255 today, no thank you.
Yeah.
It doesn't bury you.
The name White House has got to be the best political name I've ever heard.
Oh, and would he love to be there?
Yeah.
He's not even.
I've never heard of his name before. But
He's never even invited there because he's such a whack job. But he would love to be in it. What can I say? All right. What do you guys think about this one? Wall Street bulls eye milder gains in 2026 after a three-year surge. Any relation to that?
I mean, it's logically, it on the surface, it makes sense, but it's pretty arbitrary to say something like that.
Yeah. You have such a high bound to work with. You're giving yourself like a, 18% range?
That's true.
Yeah.
So if we get just a 12% year, is that qualified?
Like, oh, I called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
You know, there's one thing your mother has taught me over the years, just don't always believe the guy who wrote the headline, because what he's talking about is an estimate of 9.2%. That's not exactly bailing out or forecasting gloom and doom.
I mean, I would be thrilled if he was right. I would be very grateful for a 9% year, but that's probably the least remarkable prediction choice you could have.
Yeah.
It's like just historically on the nose.
Yeah. I've had this one out for a while and I haven't brought it up, and I know that there's a good chance Joey might know this. I thought that the portability concept for people who die with a net worth, where if each couple has, I think it's 15 million today, each one of a couple have 15 million, that when one dies, the other one jumps to 30 without doing anything. That's how I learned about this. But this article, and it's from ThinkAdvisor, and I don't always trust these guys. They're kind of edgy to me. But it says, if you don't file a Form 706 gift tax return when one spouse dies, you won't get the portability.
That's correct.
It is true.
It's like the most important thing.
So if I learned it wrong. Dies, yeah.
If you have a high net worth, for most people, the reason it doesn't come up, for most people,
right,
the 15 million is more than enough.
Well, I would file it regardless. If I had a net worth of 100 grand, I'd file it, because what if the next day you win the lottery?
Well, I think it's worth doing for everybody, because let's say that person dies during an era like now where the exemption is extremely high. And then 10 years from now, we go back to an era where if you're alive, your exemption 600,000. Well, now that 15 million portability that you locked in suddenly becomes relevant. Yeah, so everybody should be doing this.
If anyone has lost a spouse, or if you're a son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter and one of the people died, it isn't a big deal to file it. It's a big deal if you don't file it.
It is, yeah.
It's not a complex form. I have filed them in the past. And it's yeah. No biggie.
And that's Form 706, which often gets confused with 709. 709 is the gift tax form. And the way to remember this, kind of morbidly, is 706, it ends in 6 because you're 6 feet under.
Okay.
That's the gross way I remember it, but I never get it wrong.
Now I'll remember that one until I'm 6. All right. Good. I want everybody to remember that if you're a highly compensated employee, meaning you have a W-2 for $150,000 or more, and you contribute regularly to your 401k, and you're of age where you can do catch-up contributions, that they, as of right now, they will have to be Roth contributions, meaning your tax bill is going to go up. And I do not prefer a Roth 401k version to a Roth IRA. I much prefer the Roth IRA. It's very flexible, and you can self-control it and all that kind of thing. So if you're one of those people and you can't afford to do both a Roth and the catch-up contribution, I would start by funding the Roth and then do what you have to. I just think there's a valid preference using the IRA. Feel free to disagree, anybody, but that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think if the amount of money you have to save, I don't know, what do we normally say the triage order is? First, you max your employer match no matter what. Find a way to do it. It's free money. Yeah.
So in that case, if you're a low-income individual, you definitely don't want to use the Roth IRA. You want to use the 401k because you're getting free money.
Right.
Exactly.
Up to that point. And then once you hit that maximum match amount from your employer, then I think, if you've got $6,000 more to save or $7,000 or whatever it is this year for the Roth IRA, I think it's
$7,500.
Yeah. Then I agree with Steve. $7,500 in a Roth IRA is an excellent choice because you can buy the whole world of investments is available to you instead of the 10 options your employer gives you.
Yeah, and if you're making good money and have good money put away, then a lot of people will treat the Roth IRA as, this is where I want to put my risk assets and hope they really grow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a wonderful idea. And this, I didn't know if this would actually take effect, but it made the cut. So that's it.
But if you're a high-income person that wants to contribute to a Roth for whatever reason, your only option might be the Roth 401k.
It's possible.
Because you might make too much money to put to a Roth IRA.
It's possible. But if you can, just lean Roth, that IRA. That's my version of it. Okay, just this month, after years otherwise, less than half of Americans surveyed said they were living paycheck to paycheck. I find that astounding and great news to me. So now if we work on getting it under 40%, that'll be even better.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very surprised when that came up and very pleased. I really think that the average American, and especially the super smart ones, the kind that you see on TV blabbering, those are the really smart Americans. I think they're all in denial, I guess, that this economy is going to take off. They lived through 4 years of good economic policy, and it was great. But what do they remember? COVID. So COVID isn't going to happen again. I'm really optimistic that this is going to turn into good news. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, you have more people participating in the stock market now than ever before.
Yeah.
I think that's a great feature of the present moment.
Some companies are cutting food costs. I've got an example from home. If you go to Fresh Market on Thursdays and get their rotisserie chickens, they're $6. Oh, not anymore. For two Thursdays now, they're $5.
Wow.
Some people are actually angry at Costco because Costco is starting to cut food prices.
What was that trivia answer?
That was the trivia.
That was it. Okay.
Yeah, it was about the financial,
gotcha,
not living paycheck to paycheck. And I don't think we have time to do anything else, but we'll be back next week. Hope you are, and we'll go through some more. We'd like to keep you apprised of what's going on right now, stupid or otherwise. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week. This is the Bantamweight Financial Hour.